From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Good afternoon and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up as we prepare to wrap up our 10-day tour of Israel and depart Jerusalem, reports out of Washington, D.C. say incoming Secretary of State Mike Pompeo's first trip in his new post will be to Jerusalem. We'll talk about the significance of such a trip, as well as the move of the U.S. Embassy, with CBN Middle East Bureau Chief Chris Mitchell. Also, we'll head to the southern steps of the Temple Mount and talk with New York Times bestselling author Joel Rosenberg about the growing concerns over Russia's actions in this region of the world. And religious freedom will once again be a priority in America's foreign policy with the confirmation of Mike Pompeo. And believe me, there is a lot of work to be done in the Middle East. We'll be joined by a Christian Palestinian pastor who says the Palestinian Authority operating in the so-called West Bank of Israel is openly discriminating against Christians. Dr. Naeem Khoury is here. Then we'll be joined by the all-star team, General Jerry Boykin, Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann, and Ambassador Ken Blackwell, who've been with us on our tour here in Israel. So you won't want to miss that conversation. That's coming up later here on Washington Watch. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you missed anything on your way home, you can always check it out later at TonyPerkins.com. By the way, if you missed anything over the last week and a half, we've had some really great interviews with folks here. In fact, I can't think of any of them that weren't worth listening to. And so if you missed any of the programs in the last 10 days, I would encourage you to go to TonyPerkins.com and you get a rundown day by day of who we had on the program, and you can catch those interviews. If you're on Twitter, well, you can keep up with me at T Perkins. All right, Chris Mitchell is the CBN Middle East Bureau Chief. He's been here in Jerusalem for 17 years. He's someone we connect with every time we're here in Jerusalem. In fact, I remember first time I came to Israel a number of years ago, I was standing in line at the gas station early one morning to get a cup of coffee, and heard someone mention my name from behind me, and lo and behold, it was Chris Mitchell.
Yeah, I remember that very well.
It was like, yeah. Wow, come on, halfway around the world, and I run into somebody in a gas station getting a cup of coffee. What are the chances?
Yeah, well, I recognize you. I've seen you many times and heard you as well and admired your work, and I thought, well, this is a good opportunity to introduce myself, and there we were in the Paz gas station on King David Street in Jerusalem.
I thought, wow. But we've been able to connect many times since. Every time we come over here, of course, you're on the program on other times as well. Pretty exciting time here in Israel.
Very exciting. We have the 70th anniversary of Israel just celebrated on the Hebrew calendar on April 19th. It'll be celebrated on the Gregorian calendar this May 14th. And then the embassy for the United States of America is going to be moved from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. It's
so
amazing.
Let me ask you, do you celebrate your birthday on the Gregorian calendar and the Hebrew calendar?
Oh, no,
you get two
I
birthdays a year?
No, I haven't been able to do that.
Okay. I
stick to the Gregorian calendar.
Well, I just mentioned this. Found out today that the incoming Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, reports are unofficial, that his first trip abroad as Secretary of State will be to Jerusalem. How significant of a statement is that?
I think it's huge. It sends a number of signals. First of all, I think it sends a signal that the Trump administration really sees Jerusalem and Israel as central to its Middle East foreign policy. I don't think Secretary of State Rex Tillerson had been here at all in his tenure as Secretary of State. I think it sends a message to Israel's enemies, to Iran, that they're going to stand back of the Jewish state because Iran has been threatening Israel. I think that's one thing. Certainly, probably preparation for the announcement and the move of the U.S. Embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. I'm sure that's part of what he's coming for. But there's a lot of threats in the region, a lot of things going on inside Syria. The United States, Great Britain, and France just attacked Syrian chemical weapons facilities. Russia is playing a greater role inside Syria. What will be the future of U.S. forces inside Syria? Those are all major issues, and I'm certainly Secretary-designate, perhaps Secretary of State Pompeo, will be discussing all those and more.
What about Iran, as we see more and more of the mullahs there saying, look, we're drawing a clear line
right.
of defiance yep. against both Israel and the United States?
Yeah, what Iran wants to do is they want to have a road, a clear path all the way from Tehran to the Mediterranean, and that includes Iraq, and they've pretty well solidified that. But also they want to do that in Syria, and that what's preventing that would be partly the U.S. presence there in northern Syria, and also mainly Israel. And
right.
Israel's red line is that they're not going to allow Iran to have a robust military presence inside Syria. That's, so you have these two opposing forces. Israel won't allow Iran to have a military presence inside Syria, and Iran is continuing to go ahead and try to do that. You had just a T-4 military base inside Syria that was presumably attacked by Israel just a few days ago. 7 Iranians were killed. And this is the beginning, perhaps, and it started maybe about 2 months ago when Iran sent an armed drone inside Israeli right. airspace of actually direct confrontation between Israel and Iran. It really marked a difference because usually proxies,
right.
Iranian proxies, had fought Israel. But this is now direct confrontation. It could escalate. This is really the thing to watch, I think, in the Middle East, whether Israel and Iran coming into direct confrontation. It has huge implications for the region and for the United States as well.
I was going to ask you about that, Chris Mitchell. What do you think, or what are you hearing? Is there anticipation? I know that in this region of the world, conflict is a constant.
Sure.
But is this different? Are we seeing a greater concern about this escalation?
To a certain extent, I think there is a difference. In fact, I was sitting with a friend of mine who I've known ever since I moved here. He helped get us started here at CBN News. He said for the first time that he can remember, he feels like war could break out at any moment. Now, it is the Middle East, and conflict is a constant, so you don't know if that's going to happen. But I think this scenario really is a bit different than it has been before. Like it is in the Middle East, things could wane and go quiet for months, weeks. We'll see what happens. But the circumstances are combustible right now that could explode into anything because you have these two opposing forces. And then Syria is just a breeding ground for all these regional and global actors and agendas. It's really, I don't know if anybody's seen Syria or the Middle East quite like this in many, many years.
Well, Chris, do you see some unusual alliances developing? I mean, obviously, Israel and Jordan have had a pretty close relationship,
sure.
especially from a standpoint of intelligence sharing, which I think is actually going to help. Mike Pompeo, as
sure.
former director of the CIA, had very close relationships with the Minister of Intelligence in Jordan. But could we see a stronger alliance with maybe Israel and Jordan, Israel, Saudi Arabia, Israel with Egypt, as Iran is making a stronger move?
Definitely. And we've seen that relationship growing in the last couple of years. Back in 2014, when there was a brief war between Hamas and Israel, you could see behind the scenes already this relationship developing that Saudi Arabia, that Jordan, Egypt, the Gulf states, all saw Iran as a greater enemy than they saw Israel. And this was a sea change, a historic change in their relationship. And so you really do see this two competing forces. You see those that are opposing Iran, and then you see those that are with Iran, which would include Russia, the Assad regime on one side, and you see Israel, the United States, and the Sunni nations on the other side. And so that's really the big sort of brewing conflict, the greater conflict happening right now in the Middle East.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins, once again broadcasting from Israel as we wrap up our 10-day tour here, and we'll be heading back to the States. Chris Mitchell, my guest, he is the bureau chief of the Middle East division of the CBN, stationed here in Jerusalem. What does this mean, Chris, to Americans? I mean, our listeners, predominantly evangelical Christians, mm-hmm. Scattered out all across the United States. What difference does it make what happens in this part of the world?
Well, for a couple of reasons, and it's a great question because, you know, it's 6,000 to 7,000, maybe longer for those on the West Coast.
It's a long flight, I'll tell you that much.
It is a long flight, 10 to 11 hours. But I think it's very important for Americans to realize that the Middle East is such a vital part of the world to be involved in. Somebody has said, I think it was the deputy prime minister for diplomacy, Michael Oren, that said, you know, if the Middle East, if you leave the Middle East will follow you. I think it's very important, first of all, for Israel to stand with Israel, to have a robust presence in here. You have a lot of actors like Russia, Iran, the Assad regime that are really opposing the Jewish state to one degree or another. And I think if the United States, and I know this is the great debate right now in the United States because President Trump announced maybe a couple of weeks ago, he wanted to get out of Syria. And I understand that feeling. And yet if the United States pulls out, it would leave a vacuum in this region that would be filled with bad actors like Iran. And Iran is waiting to fill that vacuum. And if you have Iran filling that vacuum, it poses an even greater threat to our main ally, perhaps in the world, Israel. And that would perhaps be actually an added incentive for Iran to pose a greater military threat to the Jewish state. So I think even though it's very hard, it's very difficult, sometimes it's very confusing, I think it's very important that the United States maintain its presence here in the Middle East.
Well, Chris, you've been living here for 17 years. This region of the world has remained volatile. I mean, ever since really the French and the English kind of imposed a nation-state solution here on this nomadic land, tribal land, are we ever really going to see peace in this part of the world?
Well, I don't think so. I think, and it may sound simple, but I think we'll never see peace here in this region until the Prince of Peace comes back, until Jesus comes back here. And a lot of people interpret the signs of the times right now as is his return is perhaps in our lifetime, but at least we see the signs of the times. But there are so many competing agendas. You have Sunnis that oppose the Shiites oppose the Sunnis. You have geopolitical interests right now that are not going to be satisfied anytime soon by Iran, by Russia, and we haven't even mentioned Turkey. Many people see
more and more unreliable.
Exactly, and we see a growing attempt by President Erdogan to establish what's called a caliphate. I mean, something that had been dismantled more than a century ago, or almost a century ago, and now he wants to impose this in the region and certainly within Turkey, and taking really trampling on human rights, religious rights, like Pastor Andrew Brunson. So all these things are happening, and it's a very volatile region, but it's important for the U.S. to stay and important to pray for the peace of Jerusalem.
Without question. Chris Mitchell, as always, great to have you on the program. Good to talk with you.
Great to be with you, Tony.
All right, folks, don't go away. On the other side of the break, we're going to be joined on the southern steps of the Temple Mount by New York Times best-selling author Joel Rosenberg as we talk about the concerns over Russia's actions in this region of the world. Don't go away. We're coming back with more Washington Watch right after this. Hello, this is Tony Perkins from Washington Watch. You know, in all my years here at the Family Research Council, one of the things that encourages me the most about you, our listeners, is your willingness to help advance the things that matter most, faith, family, and freedom. Your support is enabling FRC to play a major role in the current administration's actions to protect religious freedom, as well as rolling back threats to pastors' free speech rights, just to name a few. But your help is needed for the work ahead as we seek to protect religious freedom in the military and finally defund Planned Parenthood. Please stand with FRC right at this moment. You can make your gift by going to TonyPerkins.com or make a gift by calling 1-800-225-4008. Again, our number 800-225-4008 or go to TonyPerkins.com. God bless you and may God bless the United States of America.
Hey, I'm back. I brought food. What's the score?
98%.
What?
My congressman got a 98% on the Family Research Council Action scorecard.
You are such a nerd.
Family Research Council Action created a new scorecard to help others understand how well their member of Congress is doing on the things that are important to you. Like how your representatives voted on taxpayer funding for abortion, repealing and replacing Obamacare, the confirmation of Neil Gorsuch to the Supreme Court, and other important legislation relating to faith, family, and freedom.
Really? I barely know my congressman. Let me look this up. How do I get the info on this?
Go to frcaction.org/scorecard. Once you find out how your representative voted on these issues, you should let them know your thoughts and keep them accountable. Whoa, you're typing it all wrong. It's frcaction.org/scorecard.
Okay, I got it now. I'll keep an eye for my representatives for any foul balls.
Somewhere out there right now, a teacher is using a new technique. Not to teach some new math method, but to control the emotions of children in the classroom. Sounds like a conspiracy theory, doesn't it? It's not. Social-emotional learning, known as SEL, is a new catchphrase that now dominates public education policy. However, hidden behind the SEL claim of building kids' self-confidence is a statist agenda of social engineering that insists on total conformity of thought. It disregards the genuine individuality of students and their family relationships and requires monitoring and tracking of their emotions. Don't miss FRC's new speaker series event featuring Stella Morabito, in which she discusses how SEL is programming our children by enforcing conformity, invading privacy, and undermining the influence of family and faith in a child's life. Learn more at frc.org/SEL. Again, that's frc.org/SEL.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins, and we continue our tour in Israel. In fact, right now I'm standing on the southern steps of the Temple Mount with our good friend Joel Rosenberg, who is, as you know, he's been on the program many, many times, is both a citizen of Israel and the United States, and he and his family moved over here about 4 years ago.
That's right.
And anyway, he just recently, we had him on at the National Religious Broadcasters talking about his book, The Kremlin Conspiracy, and it's just fascinating how Joel seems to have this these prophetic novels that unfortunately in some cases unfold, but warnings of what may happen. Joel Rosenberg, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Great to be with you, Tony, and especially here in Jerusalem and on the southern steps, no less. Wow, if you've got listeners, which I'm sure you do, who have never been here, I hope they'll sign up for your next tour, because this is just, it's been special to be with you and your tour group here. It's one thing to stand with Israel, as I always say, but to stand in Israel, that's pretty cool.
Well, it's eye-opening to experience this, and you spoke to our group here on the Southern Steps, along with Chris Mitchell, was with us as well, and then you were with us the other day, went over into the West Bank. It was at the Mount of Olives, and it's just been it's been an educational experience for people. And as we were talking this morning, biblical prophecy is unfolding before our very eyes.
It is. And what's interesting is among evangelicalism generally, many pastors don't teach it because it's often sensationalized. Somebody says, oh, the end of the world is April 23rd or something. And this stuff is ridiculous. But it causes even people of goodwill to just kind of shy away from it. But 27% of the Bible is prophecy, some of which came true with Jesus, you know, being the Messiah, and other prophecies in history. But we are standing, and the fact that we are standing in a reconstituted sovereign state of Israel is evidence that the Bible is the only book on the planet that ever said that would happen. Even many of our church fathers who love the scriptures and we are, you know, we so appreciate, they didn't believe this would literally happen. And here we are. Every time you hear in the news something about Israel, that's the evidence that those prophecies have been fulfilled. It's a sovereign state, 70 years running. Jews have come back, rebuilt the ancient ruins. Doesn't mean there aren't other challenges ahead, but it tells us our scriptures are true, and then we have confidence that the other things that the Bible says, that are coming, including the return of our Savior, we can take that to the bank.
Well, we're just a couple of weeks away from the United States moving its embassy to Jerusalem. I mean, that is further evidence that we're living in a time when we see all of this unfolding before our very eyes.
Right. Now, of course, you know, my Palestinian friends, our Jordanian, Egyptian friends, would, you know, Christian friends even, would say, oh, my gosh, there's nothing in the Bible about the embassies. That is all true. But the point being that Jerusalem is a Jewish capital and has been since King David named it as such because God told him to. This is telling us, not that we don't love our Arab neighbors and friends, but this is the only capital in the world that Jews have. It's not like we've got, you know, 50 to choose from, as Muslims do, number one. Number two, the United States has been the best friend of the people of Israel since Harry Truman, President Truman, signed or announced that we were, the United States was going to honor and respect, recognize the newly declared state of Israel in 1948. The first country to recognize it, Israel, was the United States. And yet, this is the only country in the world where the United States has not had its capital in the capital city. Every enemy that we still have relationships with as the United States, we have our capital in there. Our embassy in their capital. So this is a correction of a historic injustice, really, a mistake. And it shouldn't preclude peace, but it should say, hey, the United States is our best friend and vice versa, and we ought to treat Israel like any other country, at least.
But what it does say is America is coming in line with biblical truth, because as Jerusalem is the capital of Israel, we're just recognizing that fact. And the fact that that truth is being embraced. Of course, other countries now are following the lead of the United States, Guatemala being one. I think it's a very, very significant time.
It is significant. It is significant. And what I would hope, my prayer is that it will set into motion a recognition among Arab peoples and nations. Israel's here to stay. It's not going anywhere. And we ought to move beyond the fight over whether Israel is going to be here or not and find a way to make peace. In the meantime, the United States, knowing that Israel is our strongest ally and vice versa, yes, this makes sense. It shouldn't actually be news that best friends are honoring each other as best friends. Israel doesn't say, well, Washington, I don't know, that's not your embassy, you know, that's not your capital, we're going to be in Arizona or something. You know, it's a little odd. It is odd. There's a historic reason for it. But I'm grateful. I'm grateful. And I have to say, you know, I have had criticisms of President Trump. I don't agree with everything he's doing. But there are so many things he's doing better than I would have thought. And I'm impressed by how closely he is focusing on the Middle East and on re-strengthening the bonds between the United States and Israel. It's a blessing for the United States, I believe.
Joel Rosenberg, almost out of time here as we're standing here on the steps of the southern steps of the Temple Mount. This still remains a very volatile region, and a lot of things still kind of fluid in terms of the alliances being made, the threats to Israel. Yesterday's enemies are today's allies.
That's true. And you know, you were talking about my new novel, The Kremlin Conspiracy. I believe the number one threat to Israel is actually Russia. It's true that Iran, tactically and in some ways strategically, is an enormous threat. But they are a threat made worse because the world's largest nuclear-armed enemy of the United States, Israel and freedom, Russia, has formed this alliance with Iran. This is dangerous at every possible level. And Russia, Iran, Turkey are taking over Syria. And I, you know, one of the things we need to pray for President Trump is don't abandon Syria. We can't let Iran grab hold of this thing. This would be a tragedy for everybody.
Joel Rosenberg, as always, great to be with you. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Tony. Great to be with you in Jerusalem, of all places. God bless you.
All right, folks, don't go away. We're coming back with more Washington Watch. Dr. Naeem Khoury joins us, pastor of First Baptist Bethlehem. That's next here on Washington Watch. Don't go away. A lot more to come. We'll be right back.
Most people remember Frederick Douglass as a fiery speaker who denounced slavery and advocated for the civil rights of African Americans and women. What is less known is Douglass's commitment to faith and family. The month of February marked the bicentennial of Frederick Douglass's birth, so it is a fitting time to reflect on the legacy of this great author, scholar, humanitarian, and entrepreneur who served five United States presidents. In an exclusive Family Research Council speaker series event, Reverend Dean Nelson, chairman of the board for the Frederick Douglass Foundation, and Colin Hanna, president of Let Freedom Ring, explore the life of Douglass as a Christian minister, a husband, and a father, and examine how his legacy can be an example for Christian citizenship today. To view this important event, go to frc.org/Douglass. Again, that is frc.org/Douglass.
If you're like me, you care a lot about where our country is headed. With so much at stake in America, do our leaders have a way forward? To find out, mark your calendars for the Values Voters Summit on September 21st to 23rd in Washington, D.C., and join hundreds of Americans who, like you, want a culture in which human life is valued, families flourish, and religious liberty thrives. Past speakers at this conference include Donald Trump, Mike Pence, Mike Huckabee, Paul Ryan, Ben Carson, Steve Scalise, Kellyanne Conway, Kirk Cameron, Laura Ingraham, Dana Lash, Sean Hannity, and Mark Levine. On September 21st to 23rd, stand with Values Voters to restore our great nation. Registration is now open. Don't miss the special early bird price, but act fast. Visit valuesvotersummit.org for more information. That's valuesvotersummit.org.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad that you are with us once again. We are in Israel. And I got a chance. We had one of my favorite pastors in Israel connected with us and spoke to our group. He is the pastor of First Baptist Church of Bethlehem. Now, I have to tell you, that's in my view, to be able to be the pastor of First Baptist Bethlehem, I'm not sure that it gets much better than that. Although, I will tell you, and you have heard Dr. Naeem Khoury on our program before. In fact, last time was at Christmas. He was on right before Christmas. He is standing in Bethlehem, which is under the Palestinian Authority, preaching the gospel, but it's coming at a price. He joins us now here on Washington Watch. Dr. Khoury, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Brother Tony. It's good to be with you here in Jerusalem.
Well, it is good to be here in Jerusalem and see what's happening. This is a pretty exciting time here in the nation of Israel.
I believe it is, because what we see is taking place, moving the American embassy to Jerusalem. I believe this is the fulfillment of the prophecy of the unification of Jerusalem, and that really is stirring up the whole Islamic world against America. And I don't believe just against America. I believe it's against Christianity. And I believe the next war in the whole world, or in the Middle East in general, it's not going to be over politics. It's not going to be over land. It's not going to be over mosques and churches. It's going to be over religion. And that's worst thing that could happen in this place.
Well, look, Dr. Khoury, let's talk a little bit about that. In Bethlehem, again, which is in the eastern, what's called the eastern part of Israel, their West Bank, under Palestinian Authority control. What do we see happening there? Are we seeing greater rights extended to evangelicals in that community, or are we continuing to see the Palestinian Authority restricting the rights of Christians?
I believe it's we are under more pressure, stress, restriction from the Palestinian Authority, because they are not giving us our rights as Christians, as evangelical Christians. Right. Let me say this clearly. Evangelical Christians, and I believe there is some kind of discrimination between evangelical Christians and the Palestinian Authority and nominal Christians in that land.
And part of that is not recognizing the church's ability to marry couples and those marriage certificates, birth certificates, which in this region of the world, the church is the one that recognizes, which that has so many implications. That's the birth certificate. That is the identification papers. It's all of these things wrapped into that. It's legitimacy.
Yeah, it is. It is sad. It is sad to see they have banned all our marriage certificates, our birth certificates, our death certificates. And can you imagine, as a Palestinian couple, when we perform a marriage in our church, and when they have a child, they consider the Palestinian Authority. I could not believe it. The Palestinian Authority consider their child as illegitimate child. That's too much of discrimination.
Right. Well, Dr. Corey, what would you like to see happen, or what should Christians in the United States of America be doing at this time, as we see, not just in Bethlehem, but in this region of the world where there is true persecution toward religious minorities, Christian evangelicals in particular?
I believe Christian evangelicals in the United States, and I'm talking to leaders as congressmen, senators, and others, to be able to put so much pressure on the leaders in general in the Middle East, not only in Israel, not only in the West Bank, not only among the Palestinians, mainly Christians in the Middle East are under fire and under persecution. In some countries, you cannot talk about it. In some countries, you can see it clearly, but no one is able to open his mouth, because if he say anything about it, he will be disappearing, he'll go to jail, and nobody knows where he is. And that's what we need, to encourage Christians to take a stand, to really move this issue publicly, openly, with the leadership in the Middle East. And I think this is time to do that.
One final question for you, almost out of time, Dr. Corey. Are you hopeful that under the Trump administration, what you've seen so far, that there might be some of that movement to provide encouragement, support, and relief to religious minorities here in this region?
I believe the courage and the guts Trump had with his cabinets, with the leadership around him, if they have that courage and guts to do and to say what they are saying, I think they can move things also concerning the Christian liberty and Christian freedom in this country.
Well, we're going to be praying and working to that end. Dr. Naeem Corey, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. It's good to be here with you, Brother Tony.
All right, folks, to find out more, look, this is where you come in. Go to the website, TonyPerkins.com, and follow the links over, and be a part of bringing relief, freedom, and hope to religious minorities and Christians in the Middle East. All right, don't go away. We're coming back with more Washington Watch right after this.
Hi there. Let's play a word association game. Are you ready? When I say Washington, D.C., what's the first thing you think of? If you're like many Americans, a word like corruption might top the list, but Christian might be the last thing you'd associate with Washington, D.C. Well, the truth is that Christians have voice in our nation's capital. For over 35 years, Family Research Council has been working daily to advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and culture from a Christian worldview. When the Christian worldview is being pushed out of the public, FRC is there to stand firm on a biblical vision for America. Will you stand with us? To learn more about Family Research Council and to find out how you can stand with us in defense of faith, family, and freedom, please visit FRC.org and follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest news and ways you can take action. Again, that's FRC.org.
Hey, I'm back. I brought food. What's the score?
98%.
What?
My congressman got a 98% on the Family Research Council Action scorecard.
You are such a nerd.
Family Research Council Action created a new scorecard to help others understand how well their member of Congress is doing on the things that are important to you. Like how your representatives voted on taxpayer funding for abortion, repealing and replacing Obamacare, the confirmation of Neil Gorsuch to the Supreme Court, and other important legislation relating to faith, family, and freedom.
Really? I barely know my congressman. Let me look this up. How do I get the info on this?
Go to frcaction.org/scorecard. Once you find out how your representative voted on these issues, you should let them know your thoughts and keep them accountable. Whoa, you're typing it all wrong. It's frcaction.org/scorecard.
Okay, I got it now. I'll keep an eye for my representatives for any foul balls.
Hello, this is Tony Perkins from Washington Watch. You know, in all my years here at the Family Research Council, one of the things that encourages me the most about you, our listeners, is your willingness to help advance the things that matter most, faith, family, and freedom. Your support is enabling FRC to play a major role in the current administration's actions to protect religious freedom, as well as rolling back threats to pastors' free speech rights, just to name a few. But your help is needed for the work ahead as we seek to protect religious freedom in the military and finally defund Planned Parenthood. Please stand with FRC right at this moment. You can make your gift by going to TonyPerkins.com or make a gift by calling 1-800-225-4008. Again, our number, 800-225-4008, or go to TonyPerkins.com. God bless you, and may God bless the United States of America. Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. So glad you are joining us as we broadcast our final program from Israel. And I'm joined by the All-Star team. That's right, the All-Star team that has been with us throughout the last 10 days as we've traveled through the country. General Jerry Boykin, Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann, and Ambassador Ken Blackwell. To all of you, welcome back once again to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
Good to be with you, Tony.
All right. We've come down to the end of our tour here, and I just want to, you know, ask each of you as we start off kind of the most significant thing you've seen, and I know many of you have been here. I mean, you've all been here many times, but in this tour, as we had 200 so supporters and friends of FRC with us, unique time. We were here for Memorial Day. We were here for Independence Day. We're here really on the eve of the moving of the embassy to Jerusalem. We were talking earlier with Chris Mitchell about the fact that Mike Pompeo's reportedly his first trip abroad as Secretary of State will be to Jerusalem. Michelle, let me start with you, ladies first. Michelle Bachmann, anything stick out to you in this trip?
Every single second of every single day, traveling with 200 of the finest people you could ever travel with. It really was an outstanding trip in every way. But I think one of the most significant things was the very last thing we saw, and it was the empty lot that will one day be the brand new United States Embassy. Our bus driver took a 10-minute detour so that we could go by. Everyone on our bus wanted to see that site. And as we know, there will be a temporary embassy where the current consulate in Jerusalem will be turned into the official embassy today, but there will be an official embassy. That land has been designated for a long, long time. But there was never any end date that it was actually going to be built. Now it's going to be built. So here among the group that you've assembled here in Israel, Tony, there is such great and utter rejoicing. Because what this means is that our President of the United States, with our Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo, in his very first act, will be saying the importance of the United States recognizing the legitimacy of Israel's choice and God's choice that Jerusalem is the capital of Israel. And I'm honored Ambassador Friedman invited me to come and attend the opening of the U.S. Embassy. I can't wait to come back for that. It is a day of rejoicing because I think that act alone will do more to embolden Israel and bring peace into the Middle East than any other single act that Donald Trump could have made as president of the United States, other than blowing up the Iran agreement, which I hope he does.
Well, I think that strength is respected in this part of the world. And General Boykin, one of the I would have to think one of the highlights for you, which I think was a highlight for many, many, many of the folks on this trip, was an interview that you conducted last night at one of our presentations regarding the really the first soldier on the ground here in Jerusalem in the 1967 when they retook Jerusalem.
Yeah, Tony, that was a very, very special evening. And I think that certainly our people showed their appreciation and respect for an 85-year-old man named Eric Ackman. Eric Ackman was the intelligence officer for the 55th Paratroopers Brigade, which is the actually reserve organization that on the 7th of June 1967 retook the Temple Mount. So when you look at the real famous photograph of these IDF soldiers at the Temple Mount, looking up with just awe and on their faces, Eric Ackman was there. He was the intel officer, and he was here with us last night, and I think that he epitomized the humility of the average IDF officer, and that's the way they all are, the ones that I've been around.
Yeah.
It's all about their country. It's all about the survival of their nation and their families, and it's not about them individually.
It's kind of like the, well, what else would you do? It's like that's what's expected of you. There's this sense of this is our country, and anyone would do what I did because it's the right thing to do.
Yeah, America could take some lessons from Israel in terms of patriotism, and that's exactly their attitude. Well, what do you mean? I'm a hero. Well, I did what I was supposed to do, you know, and it's about survival. It's about my family, mm-hmm. you know. So I think that was a very special evening last night, and I was privileged to be able to interview him.
And a book about that is called It's In Our Hands.
Well, there's a documentary that was done by CBN called In Our Hands. There's also a book that talks about that and all the rest of the 67 war, and that is actually called The Lion's Gate.
Which is the gate they went through to get to the Temple Mount.
Yeah, very good book.
Yeah, I would encourage folks to take a look at a lot of history here. There's so much stuff to see. Ken Blackwell, former ambassador to the United Nations Commission on Human Rights, mayor of Cincinnati, secretary of state. I know probably one of the highlights for you is being able to get to the dessert bar after the general got finished. But so what for you, what stuck out on this trip?
Tony, I was first in Israel, in Jerusalem, in 1976, some 9 years after the reunification of the city. And I, for a short stint, was an intern with the then mayor of Jerusalem and the longest-serving mayor of Jerusalem, Teddy Kollek. And he was fond of quoting an academic, a rabbi, Abraham Heschel, who said, "Respect discovers the dignity in others." And he led his city by walking around and just projecting respect. And he got respect. And for me, just to see how, since that period of time, how Jerusalem has grown and how vibrant it is, and that the capital is now being recognized by the United States as the capital of Israel, Jerusalem. I just know that after he served about 28 years, this would be a proud moment for Teddy, because it's a proud moment for me, and the fact that we have a president that has stuck to his word, kept his promise, really does mean something special in this very dangerous time in which we live.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins, broadcasting from Israel. We're wrapping up a 10-day tour of the country with about 200 friends and supporters, and some of our
key leaders and guest lecturers on this trip. Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann, General Jerry Boykin, Ambassador Kim Blackwell join me as we kind of wrap up our trip here. Your sense of folks on your bus, many of them first-time visitors to Israel, what did kind of give our listeners a sense of what it was like for them?
It was amazing. On my bus, the folks said, man, this is like drinking from a fire hose. There was just so much to see, so much to do, how we prioritized it. But, you know, it was organized well because it gave time for the experts to speak to them, but it also gave time for them to develop their own personal relationship with Israel and its capital city, Jerusalem. And so you could see it in their, not only in how they were talking, but the fact that they were able to push through being tired, you know, from the hectic
pretty
pace
full
that
schedule.
We had, right.
So but that's the only way you can get to see stuff, but it you could almost offer a semester-long credit, college credit for this 1 week in Israel, a week and a half.
That's not a bad idea. We had quite a few grandparents that actually brought their grandchildren with them, and it's wonderful to see young people come on the trip because they see with their own eyes that the Bible is true. And I heard that over and over and over again on my bus. People who were in awe and wonder and who were brought to tears, virtually every day brought to tears because they saw with their own eyes that the Bible is true and that God fulfilled his word and scripture here in front of them. And we had great Bible teachers and great worship while we were here. So it was an unbelievable gift and privilege to be here every day. It was a 3D view of the Bible that is difficult to have when you're just reading it on your own. And everyone said they will never be the same. They will never be the same. They'd love to come back. But even if they can't come back, they've been forever changed by coming here.
You know,
General Boykin, you actually lived here. And so I was just going to ask you, is it still special when you come back here?
Oh, God, every time. Every time. It's a feeling that I can't describe. But I think that our first night here, the issue came up, and I'm so glad that it did, of the Israelis' treatment of the Palestinians. And it came up in a little bit of a negative context. But I must tell you, I don't think there's anyone leaving after this 10 days that if they had any notions of that, they have changed their mind. Because I think it was very clear to everybody on my bus and everybody in our group writ large that the Israelis are doing the very best they can to take care of the humanitarian needs, to provide jobs, to provide medical care and everything else for these people that a lot of folks, probably some that were in our, you know, in our group, thought were being mistreated. They're not, and I think that was demonstrated by our speakers as well as what they saw with their own eyes.
And I think that's a good point, General, that you know, we're talking about the buses, and you can't experience everything on a bus. And one of the mottos that I use from JH Israel, which is a place we went to in REL, is I heard and I forgot, I saw and I remembered, I did and I understood. We did all of that. We went, we put our feet on the places, we would go, we'd see the sights, but we'd come back at night and we would have some of the, in fact, I was impressed last night with Rabbi Glick.
Yehuda Glick.
Yehuda Glick that was here. He had never seen what we had before us last night with the conversation you had with Mr. Achman. And just the kind of things that the programs that put together to supplement the historical and biblical view.
Next to him, he was crying. So during the interview the general had with Ari, hearing about the Six-Day War, especially when they talked about the fact of finally being able to be on the Temple Mount, he had to take his glasses off and he had tears in his eyes. And I also thought it was profound that we were in Ariel, which is in Samaria, right, which is called the Occupied West Bank. And when we were there, the story came out that our U.S. State Department announced they will no longer call Judea and Samaria occupied lands.
Right.
They're
going to
stop
Very
doing that.
Significant.
That's huge. That's one more blessing from the Trump administration toward Israel, because what, again, the message that the Trump administration is sending is legitimacy. We see that Israel has a legitimate right to their land, which they do. People on our bus were shocked to learn that Arabs can vote here, that they can serve in the Knesset here. And so people learn things, and they were just shocked to realize this is Israel's land. It's not under contention.
It was interesting, just to tie into what Michelle just said in a previous statement. Someone during the course of this trip said that until this trip, they had read the Bible in black and white. As of this trip, the Bible turned to Technicolor, you know, and they saw things more vividly.
Yeah.
And I think that was a nice
like watching
summary.
The old version of Ben-Hur in black and white.
I like that version.
But, you know, it's just tremendous. But go back to what the general was saying and what I said earlier about Teddy. It's a respect. The Israelis have been custodians of these religious sites of all
right.
religions, and
right.
they've honored and they've respected.
Yeah.
And I can tell you that is not happening in other
right.
nation states with religious symbols and artifacts and structures that are not theirs,
yeah.
you know, of their religion.
I want to say one thing, though, Tony, for the listeners here. A lot of people are afraid to come over here. And I've never seen it so crowded here with tourists. And a lot of people are afraid to come over here. And this is all I would say to the people who are afraid to come over here. Don't come to Washington, D.C. because your chances of getting hurt are a whole lot greater in Washington, D.C. than here. Total security here and more visitors, more tourists than I've ever seen in this
place.
Yeah,
they told us this is the highest year they've ever had for tourism, 3.6 million mm-hmm. people. And it is as safe and easy to get around as anywhere you would go in the United States. So safety would be the last thing on your list.
Traffic can be a little heavy from the time to time.
Especially
hey,
go to D.C., go to L.A.
When you get to, well, that did remind me of the flash flood we had yesterday that came through. It reminded me of the D.C. drivers.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, it's been great having each of you on this trip. I want to thank you, Michelle. I want to thank you, General Boykin, Ambassador Blackwell, for being a part and being a really critical part, because as you shared in the experiences of each one of your groups that you helped lead, it has enriched the time here. So thank you all for being
privilege.
A part of it.
It was just an honor.
Thanks, Tony.
Great to be back.
Thanks for your leadership, buddy.
Yeah.
Well, folks, we're out of time. I want to thank you for joining us on this edition of Washington Watch. And Lord willing, next week I'll be in the studio in Washington with Washington Watch. So until next time, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul, found in Ephesians chapter 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you have taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.